From Summit, New Jersey, it's Grateful Dread's Potpourri, a weekly compendium of progressive news, activism, and music brought to you by Grateful Dread Public Radio, the progressive peace radio voice of Summit. Hey now, welcome to the Potpourri. I'm Natalie Davis coming to you from the studios of Grateful Dread Public Radio in Summit, New Jersey. I am so excited today. This is our inaugural episode for the program, something we've been planning for a very long time. What we hope to accomplish during these weekly shows is to expand your mind, broaden your consciousness, and introduce you to ideas and sounds that you might not hear elsewhere. Each week will be a little different, but there will be some pet concerns that pop up with frequency. Music from all genres that don't get the attention they deserve in the mainstream. Insights into medical marijuana and developments on MMJ happenings here in New Jersey. Conversations with newsmakers, artists, and interesting folks I'm sure you'll find fascinating. Progressive news and information. And a weekly segment called The Armchair Activist, which will apprise you of ways in which you can make a difference in the struggle to make this a better nation and world. The Potpourri is intended to evolve over time, and I hope you'll join us regularly as we take this journey. A little bit about Grateful Dread Public Radio. We are 15 years old this month. Yay! GDPR was founded in Baltimore, Maryland in 1996 as a community service public radio station, and we've been operating 24 hours a day ever since, offering diverse sounds and ideas for open minds. Nearly a year ago, we moved operations to Summit, a wonderful but very Republican town that we felt could use a little consciousness raising. Consider the Potpourri GDPR in miniature. Definitely check us out. Good things are happening at Grateful Dread Public Radio, which you can find at gdreadradio.net. And you can hear Grateful Dread's Potpourri on GDPR every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, with a rebroadcast Sundays at 11 p.m. Eastern. Alternately, you can catch us each week on the Normal Network, with the first airing Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Coming up on this installment of the Potpourri, we'll have a roundup of progressive news and media minutes from Free Press. The Armchair Activist will present info on an upcoming anti-war and anti-Islamophobia rally that will be held this weekend in New York City. We have info on a story in Bloomberg, of all places, covering a medical marijuana startup business right here in New Jersey, plus an interview with longtime music artist Woody Lesore, who has a new album out. All this and more on Grateful Dread's Potpourri. Stay with us.
Hey, this is David Pakman, host of The David Pakman Show. Join me each week on Tuesdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Summit, New Jersey's home for diverse sounds and ideas, member-supported Grateful Dread Public Radio.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Straub. Normal National Conference 2011, Coming of Age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
Folks, have you heard about the Bean Blossom Jamboree Foundation? The BBJF is a nonprofit organization formed to purchase and preserve the Bill Monroe Bean Blossom Bluegrass Park. This park is located in the beautiful hills just north of historic Nashville, Indiana, and it's in danger of disappearing forever. The land itself was purchased by Bill Monroe, who started the park and its rich bluegrass traditions in 1951, and has featured annual bluegrass events of majestic proportions ever since. This national treasure needs to be preserved so that future generations can enjoy the awesome beauty of the park and its rich history of bluegrass music. Folks, we need your help. The BBJF is in the process of raising the funding needed to purchase the park. You can help by donating even a small amount to help us accomplish our goal. Every nickel counts. You can also help by donating your time and helping us spread the word about the foundation and our goals. Call 1-877-989-BBJF or visit www.bbjfoundation.org today.
Multi-genre music, news talk programming that makes a difference. We are all about making a better world. We're the progressive peace voice of Summit, New Jersey. Grateful Dread Public Radio.
From the GDPR newsroom, Grateful Dread's Potpourri continues with a progressive news update. I'm Natalie Davis. The Southern Poverty Law Center calls the American Family Association a hate group for a reason. An official at the AFA has gone public with a new theory. Welfare makes African Americans promiscuous and lazy. According to Brian Fisher, the fringe right-wing group's director of issue analysis for government and public policy, the U.S. government should abandon its social safety net because aid programs destroy the traditional family and put black children at risk. In a posting from his Rightly Concerned blog, Fisher declares poverty has won and that government attempts to fight the war on poverty have been, quote, a total dismal failure. The blog post continues, saying federal aid initiatives have taught young African American women that fathers are unnecessary and obsolete, and has subsidized illegitimacy. His source for his claims? Walter Williams, a conservative pundit who happens to be African American. Fisher's advice? Christ-centered politicians should pursue policies that incentivize marriage, self-reliance, and reconstructing the American family. The posting also notes that Jesus tells Christians that they must be involved in politics. There is no mention of Jesus' dictate that we should feed the poor and help the sick. In a related story, Republican House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan has proposed a plan that would cut the federal budget by $4 trillion over 10 years. Two-thirds of the cuts he proposes would come from programs that serve poor Americans. In contrast, President Obama's National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility says deficit reduction should not increase poverty or inequality or hurt the disadvantaged. The Ryan plan, unveiled April 6th, stands in diametric opposition to the Democratic concept. In addition, cuts would target programs that help needy children. In an April 6th hearing held by the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education, Health and Human Services Director Kathleen Sebelius spoke of the dangers the GOP plan would cause for children's health efforts.
If H.R. 1 were to become the law, the budget for Head Start would be cut about $1.1 billion below 2010 funding. And we think about 218,000 children across the country who are currently being served would lose those slots, both in Head Start and in early Head Start. The president, by contrast, has proposed an increase in Head Start, feeling that that's an investment that's important to make, even though our budget is flatlined.
Also on the 6th, John Larson, who chairs the House Democratic Caucus, warned Americans that more GOP cuts are coming and opined that the Republicans are taking marching orders from the Tea Party.
Metaphorically, I said there's a cold front coming to town today, by way, or tomorrow, I guess it is, with the Tea Party that's insisting that they have to go further in their cuts. And I think this should alarm all Americans, and we understand that leadership in the Republican side won't act until the Tea Party speaks. We thought that it was we're waiting on Congress to act and respond.
In Connecticut, it's a step back and a potential leap forward on the medical marijuana front. The state's General Assembly recently killed a proposal for the state to grow and dispense cannabis for medical use via pharmacies. But then on April 5th, lawmakers in the Judiciary Committee voted to allow patients with certain conditions to grow their own medicine. The measure next moves to the Connecticut Senate for consideration. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, citizens still wait for the medical marijuana law passed 2 years ago to go into effect. As Governor Chris Christie's administration takes slow, plodding steps to create infrastructure needed to oversee medical pot use in the Garden State, New Jersey recently issued licenses for its first 6 alternative treatment centers. These are nonprofit groups permitted to grow and sell marijuana to patients with approved medical conditions. These 6 organizations, Bloomberg reports, will begin selling products soon, but it won't happen any earlier than late this summer. And there are other concerns, say cannabis activists. These first medical marijuana businesses have strong ties to traditional medical practices and involve politicians. One problem? Many pro-cannabis entities outside the mainstream are frightened off from obtaining licenses. Their worry? The draconian regulations the Christie administration has proposed. Under the rules the Republican leader wants, traditional big pharma will have a role in the process, and the potency of the allowed marijuana will be much lower than consumers want or need. Some pot advocates say that for too many Jerseyites, it will be easier to obtain the medicine illegally than to abide by Christie's proposed rules. News continues after these messages with the Free Press Media Minutes.
This is Grateful Dread's Potpourri.
This is the Progressive Peace Voice of Summit, New Jersey. Grateful Dread Public Radio.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
Say no to war and yes to peacebuttons.info. Show your peace with high-quality buttons and other items featuring the original 1958 peace symbol. Head to Detroit, Michigan's peacebuttons.info and learn about peace history. Check out the latest Constellation t-shirt. Its star-spangled beauty will make you feel the peace. Show the world you're a person of peace at peacebuttons.info, home of the little button with a big message.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
You're listening to Grateful Dread Public Radio. Diverse sounds and ideas for open minds.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
There's an old saying in the news business: news is what gets wrapped around the advertisements. But some broadcasters have ignored the dividing line between news and ads, and it's going to cost them. For several years, TV newscasters have used a type of stealth commercial called a video news release, distributed by companies to sell their products, but made to look and sound just like a news item. It's legal to use them, so long as they're identified as sponsored segments. This week, the Federal Communications Commission fined 2 stations for violating those rules: Fox affiliate KMSP in Minneapolis and South New Jersey NBC affiliate WMGM must each pay $4,000 for failing to identify the sources behind the segments. KMSP aired a report on increased consumer demand for convertible cars, sponsored by General Motors. WMGM aired a pitch for Zicam embedded in a story about treating the common cold. The FCC's action stemmed from a 2006 complaint filed by Free Press and the Center for Media and Democracy. Free Press attorney Corey Wright says that although the FCC's action was a long time coming, it's a welcome sign that the agency is paying attention to VNRs.
These are not trivial infractions. People go to their local television broadcasters to get important information about decision-making in their everyday lives, as well as more important things like health decisions or political decisions. When a station airs something that is actually a commercial masquerading as a newscast, that has really, really dire implications for an informed citizenry, for democracy, and for any number of things. But the bottom line is that people deserve to know when they're watching a commercial and when they're watching bona fide news.
The groups cited more than 100 instances of undisclosed VNRs. The FCC has now acted on 7. Wright says we shouldn't underestimate the message the industry is getting.
The fact is that the FCC did find these stations. It shows that they're looking into it, and they're not going to let those complaints slide by, even though they may take a long time to act on them.
Ask a typical American what they know about Africa, and the typical response will include at least one of these: famine, war, and disease.
There's still a perception that Africa is a scary place, an unknown place full of rather alarming people, and for Westerners, it's always a big adventure to come here.
Journalist Karen Rothmeyer has lived in Kenya since 2007. She says the foreboding image of Africa is one that's been carefully groomed by charity groups and relief organizations. In a recent article for the Columbia Journalism Review, Rothmeyer argues that NGOs in the region push stories that amplify conflict and suffering to bolster their own work as they compete for funds. And U.S. reporters, with pressures to file stories quickly, take the bait and reflect a fearful portrait of Africa in their stories. Rothmeyer admits that when she first began reporting on Africa and other developing nations, she was susceptible to the same spin and failed to question NGOs' agendas.
When I look back now, I realize I think I, too, was very much part of that groupthink of assuming that NGOs stand for everything that's good and that people who come around representing NGOs, they are ultimately the most credible sources you could ask for. Where was our skepticism? Where was our sense of wanting to know what everybody's motives are?
This lack of depth in reporting leaves Americans with an incomplete view, Rothmeyer says, and that leads to policy decisions on Capitol Hill that affect Africa. U.S. businesses are also wary of the region, which discourages economic investment.
The concern that I have is much more for how the U.S. is suffering from the poor reporting that it's getting on Africa than how Africa is suffering. Indians know this is a great place. They're rushing in here to spend billions of dollars on companies. South Africans know it's a great place. They're buying up companies here. Banks in Kenya are making money hand over fist. So it's America's loss not to have a better sense of what Africa is all about.
Rothmeyer says journalists shouldn't ignore the human rights issues in Africa, but she suggests that reporters dig beyond negative stereotypes to offer a more genuine picture.
To people thinking about how to do a better job with regard to covering Africa or any of the developing countries, just think about it as you would think about Canada. Treat it in the same way. Realize that it's a complicated place, that there are lots of stories there, good, bad, funny stories, sad stories. There's not just one story of Africa. There are more than 50 countries here. There are 1 billion people here, and there are many, many stories to be told.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
And this is Grateful Dread's Potpourri. We continue with music and conversation with Woody Lasar and activism news with the Armchair Activist. Stay where you are.
Join us for jazz. Tuesdays and Sundays, we bring you a wide array of jazz music. Mainstream, acid, hard bop, bebop, post-bop, big band, fusion, and more. All stars and up-and-comers. Join us for jazz, Tuesdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, on member-supported Grateful Dread Public Radio.
Did you know that 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way? I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet. But by being positive role models, we can change that. the number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
Multi-genre music, news talk programming that makes a difference. We are all about making a better world. We're the progressive peace voice of Summit, New Jersey. Grateful Dread Public Radio.
Welcome back to Grateful Dread's Potpourri. On today's episode, we feature the music of Woody LaSoor. If you haven't yet been graced by hearing his music, let me share a little info about this native Baltimorean. For one, he's a music lifer. His family got him started on the path at a young age. Woody started playing guitar at the age of 6. He developed over the years into an innovative songwriter and a wildly creative guitarist. By his teen years, he was opening for the legendary group Steppenwolf. As an adult, he worked on his own, performing with nationally signed acts such as Crack the Sky, Laura Hunter, Gordon Michaels, Multiplex, Kix, Aerosmith, and many more. At the same time, he founded an original music project called Cubic Feet, which still engenders warm memories throughout the Baltimore music community. With the band, he worked with folks including Procol Harum keyboardist turned producer Peter Solly, and with Shelly Yakus, a noted engineer for Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks. Cubic Feet had an impressive run, landing a publishing deal with Warner, and even cracking the North American radio and video charts. But Woody LaSoor, by and large, is a one-man font of creation. He's the definition of the independent musician. He owns his own recording studio, where he's produced works for countless young performers. He's also labored over his own music, exploring different instruments and developing an experimental approach to song building. Along the way, he's released a number of solo LPs, his magnificent eponymous debut, and another gem called War and the World, and he travels to different points around the globe, particularly in the eastern U.S. You can see examples of his performances in videos on YouTube. Now, Woody has a new self-released disc, The Glorious Adventures and Misadventures in Loveland. Today on the Potpourri, we'll chat a bit with my old friend Woody, but first, let's hear a bit from the new LP. This is the lead-off track, Woody LaSoor and Hard Times.
Drop by drop and step by step, one gives what the other one gets. It's an old saw, but you know it's true. You're waiting on the other shoe. Melt down like fire on the lawn, hurts those most put upon. It's a red line, you know what they do. You wouldn't want it done to you, and you know, and you see that it's hard times in the heart of the city. People selling off their ground, people losing half their time. Look round, it's all trickle down. In for a penny, in for a pound. It's a red flag, they're moving on you. You wouldn't want to misconstrue. Block by block and inch by inch, they buy down what they couldn't pinch. Tighten your belt, you've known what to do. Was that the last one to make it through? hard times in the heart of the city. People selling off their ground. People losing half their town. Dyer used to live next door. He wasn't rich, but he wasn't poor. He lost it all in the crunch of 08. Was it his move to deregulate? And the floods come, and the floods go. And it's hard times in the heart of the city. People selling off their ground, people losing half their town, and it's hard times in the heart of the city, people moving off their land, people making one last
Hi, Woody.
Hi, Natalie. How's it going?
I'm doing great, and I'm very glad to have you here on our premiere Potpourri. People are really digging your new album, Adventures and Misadventures in Loveland. It is absolutely a glorious piece.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about the record itself.
It was such a labor of love. I had just finished War in the World, which was a reaction to the recent campaigns in Afghanistan, at that time, recent campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq, and, you know, these kind of ripped from the headlines global themes allow you to go very deep, but they're not really personal, and I had all these personal ideas kind of building up, and relationship in my life had come to an end, and it had been a long relationship, and my feelings about this expressed themselves in spontaneous songs, and it was just amazing. I would just sit there with my guitar and all this stuff would pour out in perfect rhyme. I had been writing songs for so long, I guess since I was 8 years old. And you know all the process, you remember all the bands that I was in and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow this process of thinking had coalesced in my brain as a regular means of expression so that I would end up thinking about these factors in my life in pure rhyme without even trying to. And it was just an amazing feeling. All this stuff was gushing out of me. And as I was playing my classical guitar, you know, with the nylon strings, and I was just getting into this very kind of flowing through the keys kind of a place. And and the first third of the album just poured out like that. The rest of it just kind of followed naturally. I had two older songs that I had really believed in but hadn't been appropriate for the final song motif for the first two albums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to flow together, you know, as songs with one another. And so I had my remake of Suzanne, the Leonard Cohen song. I like to have a remake or two on each CD, but it was very long. And I had a lot of long songs on the first CD. So this song had been hanging around this big, big production. And so here I had this album with all these very kind of stripped down, intimate songs. That gave a focal point for a kind of a big orchestration. And then I had Hamden in the Rain, which was intended for the second CD, War in the World, but you know, it hadn't been quite there at the time. It was missing a part that I added, a jazz saxophone.
I love that song, by the way.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm really glad I waited. I like to read interviews with the musicians, and Stevie Wonder was my inspiration for that, you know.
You can hear that in there. And just for the people who are listening, Hamden is a section of Baltimore City that is a very interesting area because it's got a lot of old school Ballmer types, but it's also burgeoning with kind of an art scene too. And the mix of the two is rather delicious. And I really think Hamden in the Rain catches that.
Oh, wonderful. It was written right after our appearance at a festival. The Hamden Fest kind of brought out all the different groups to one place, to the main street they call the Avenue.
Sure.
36th Street.
West.
And we had just finished our gig, our performance, and we were interacting with some of the more colorful elements of the town, and that was the genesis of that song.
Well, you can hear it, and it sounds like Hamden, hon.
It's a little less dirty today.
I feel a change. The street rats run away. The ticker tape parade leaves the beer cups and the bands piled up on Main. Oh, but the crooked cross remains. The toothless zealot takes the stage. I'm sinking mainly in my pain, but I feel no rain.
It's a little less dirty today.
Oh, baby.
Hamden in the rain.
Broken window pane.
It's a little less dirty.
September day. Oh, in a way just like today.
Thank you, Natalie.
It's just something that's always been evocative about what you do. I remember years and years ago listening to you fooling around on a piano and playing, I believe it was the opening strains of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Oh, yes, I love to play that.
Oh, God.
One of my standards, yes.
Gosh, it was just so beautifully done. And so, you know, I've always known you as a stellar musician in terms of your performance quality and your musicianship. You've just grown and grown and continued to evolve in your art. When people listen to your records, you know, your first one, the eponymous one, War in the World, and then this one, you paint pictures with the instruments that you use. It's like you start with a palette and you add all of these colors to it. The folk guitar sound on Bent But Not Broken on the new album, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the lyrics that tell you the story and paint these pictures in your head, but you also have the instrument that tell the story themselves. Was that what you intended to do?
Yeah, I worked a lot on that. It was very laborious, actually. I spent a great amount of time working on just the sounds that I used in the CD, to where the songwriting and even the recording was maybe only the first 15%. And then using the song you mentioned, Bent But Not Broken, for example, I went up and I wanted to shimmer more, so I went back and I took it. The first thing that I played was a guitar capo way up the neck, almost as far up the neck as you can put a capo.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it way up there to get a chimey sound, and I was like, I want this to shimmer more. So I got a different high quality acoustic guitar, but not the same one, so it would have a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I capoed it way up the neck too, and then I played the identical thing, and I had these two waves kind of interacting with each other, you know, sometimes hitting, sometimes wrapping around each other. So I wanted it to be somewhat of a complex.
We all leave awake in the world that radiates our soul in all directions. I suckled you to warmth, my bitter wounded bird, feed the oil from your feathers, the hard marks of the weather, but in that silent sulking mind, color fades to gray, and the tiniest of slights is growing day to day, to languish like an orphan, a sad and malused creature on my surely novelette becomes the midnight horror feature. And I am waiting to come back down and plant my feet on. We contrive to make ourselves seem whole, to make the world make sense and bandage up our souls. Oh, the novels that we write in a language all our own, so all the world will nod and see how much we've grown. A vocabulary rationale, the poignant point of view, will redefine her turns to two, the world must be kept out. A fearful burning light of the truth that scars the day and brings terror to the night. I am waiting to come back down and plant my feet on the still warm ground. So tired from fighting for the things I've found. I'm bent but not broken. don't see that sums up our existence. She had a dark spot on her eye, a dark cloud on her heart, so long as she thinks it's normal. But I am waiting to come back down and plant my feet on the still warm ground. So tired from fighting for the things I've found, I'm bent but not broken. And I am waiting to come back down and find my place on the still warm ground. Still tired from fighting for the things I've found, I'm bent but not broken. And I am waiting to come back down and find my place on the still warm ground. So tired from fighting for the things I've found, I'm bent but not broken.
Well, I would think that you achieved that for sure. I mean, not only do you get this really, really groovy sound and the chiming effect, what I got out of it was the sense of something that was delicate yet strong.
Yeah, that's it.
Delicate yet strong.
That's
and,
exactly it.
And it, again, evocative.
I'm trying to make, by we, I guess I mean me and all the other people who live in my try to make each song true to its lyrics. I think no matter what people, however people come to this album, I think it's unavoidable that these songs do not all sound the same as each other. And each one's kind of like a little vignette based on its lyrics or its theme or its overall philosophical concept. And I have different instrumentation on each one. I get guests in who play recorders on one song and a beautiful Celtic female vocalist on another song, so that instead of trying to create sort of a band sound, which would endure for the CD, I'm creating a tapestry that changes with each poem.
Beautiful. Tell us about Homeless Girls. I think that's probably my favorite original on there.
Oh, that's a great song. Yeah, Homeless Girls was written with the very talented Carla Pale. You can hear her singing on that. In fact, she's the dominant voice on that. She's a wonderful singer-songwriter who I've written many songs with. She has a journalist background, and this makes her come at lyrics from a very different place. And I just really love working with her lyrics because they have a sense of randomness and yet pointedness that I find to be incredibly poetic. I just adore her poems and her sense of poetry. She's from Delaware, a small town up in Delaware, really unknown, and I discovered her and just really enjoyed and encouraged her to come down and start a recording project with me.
Rolls out the sea, sends it back one at a time to me, boy. It's sending it back one at a time to me. Down like rain, just like rain.
See how the west wind draws out the sea and how you go with broken.
So, in other words, we're probably going to hear more from this partnership in the future.
Yeah. I put like one on each CD because, again, I don't want, you know, any CD to be all one thing.
Where did you record this album?
This album was 100% recorded in my basement.
Very cool. DIY.
It's a very personal album. As a record producer, I have the luxury of having state-of-the-art equipment here, which I use for all of my professional life. You know, if I'm recording someone, if I'm producing some young artist, whatever, you know, I have to have the professional equipment. So that enables me to come down here at 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, whenever the inspiration strikes. And I can always be in that moment of inspiration. I don't have to, you know, wait and plan my life around, you know, an expensive 3-day trip to the recording studio. During which I may or may not be able to muster the ability to overcome my tension, apprehension, and overall consternation, and to focus on that one moment and find the perfect performance. Instead, I can come down here anytime, 24 hours a day, and I can just be loose and the creative person I want to be. And if something happens, it's great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't make any difference. Come back later on in the day, so I can build things and tear things down. I can construct things and then break them into little pieces and reconstruct things out of that. And that's what I did for really all three of these albums, and that's why they tend to take a fair amount of time to make. But I think if any person wants to get into this album, I would recommend that they get it for a set of good quality headphones, you know, the old, not the earbuds, but the old, you know, ear covering kind.
Oh, absolutely.
And sit down and listen to any one of these three albums with headphones, and I think they'll be pleasantly surprised.
Definitely. Sonic trip. How long did it take you to put this album together?
This one was quite a while. I was on a roll. The first one took a few years, and that's understandable. It was the first time that I had done a solo album. We had just finished the fourth Cubic Feet album, and you know, I had the original band, Cubic Feet, a couple of decades between our Warner period and our Meteor Records. We spent the better part of 2 decades making records, big studios with Peter Solley producing, the producer from Romantics, and Oingo Boingo, Ted Nugent, Peter Frampton, and all these dead bands. Shelly Yack is engineering, the engineer from Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks. And I had this sort of, well, when I went out on my own, I had to learn how to do all that stuff myself. I'd been watching the whole time, but still not quite the same. So the first album took quite a while. The second one I did in 2 years. I was on a roll. Everything's working. The third album, I thought it was going to be fast. I thought it was really on a roll. I even went in with the concept that I was going to do simpler arrangements. A concept you often hear on the sophomore or tertiary CD. And for good reason. But my equipment failed in the middle.
Ooh.
My Pro Tools, the original Pro Tools PDM system I had, it fell apart, and I could not replace it. There was no way to transfer the work that I had done at that point onto the new type of Pro Tools system or any other system. So I had to nurse this thing along through an exasperating final year and a half while at the same time trying to build a new studio parallel to it, which I finally got done, but it added another year and a half. And it's a 16-song CD. So long story short, it took 4 years to do this.
Wow. That is a long time. But you know what? It was 4 years well spent. So you're taking it on the road. Where do you generally go when you go out to perform for audiences?
The highest frequency is within a 50-mile radius of Baltimore, where I live. Next highest would be Washington area, the tri-state area. But actually, number two now is New York City. My second highest number of gigs is New York. In fact, it may be the highest for this year, just because of its importance. And I spend a lot of time. I've spent a third of my time up there, at least. And New York has been what we've been doing this year. Of course, we're up there a lot, too, to shoot the videos and stuff. Thirdly, Toronto is a big base. Louisville, the east coast of the United States, the western part of England. We're breaking into France this year, where I expect to do well. We have some really good inroads in there, and as a French speaker, I hope to be able to have a special appeal, especially with the song The French Garden on this.
Mm-hmm.
Ditto for Russia, and the other language on which I've lavished years and years of study.
Woody, that's wonderful.
It's very exciting. I really feel that the sound of language, and not just English, is really a big part of my feeling about sound. In fact, I think the Russian language sounds incredibly beautiful when it's sung. You know, it kind of gets a bad name.
Actually, I think it's a beautiful language. In fact, I like a lot of the Eastern European languages and the Slavic languages. They have a beauty all their own. But, you know, what do I know? I think German is beautiful, so.
Yeah, I agree. German's another one. You know, you have to hear it in the right singing voice. Here comes bad guy.
Exactly. Moose on squirrel.
While we're on the subject of New York, if anyone is listening to this who is in the neighborhood of Greenwich Village on the 8th, this Friday, I will be at Cafe Vivaldi at 6 p.m. and Cafe Cielo the following day. That's 8th Avenue at 52nd Street. That will be 8:30 to 11:30.
Folks,
New Yorkers,
yeah.
Anyone in the,
come on out.
Come on down.
Absolutely.
Happy to see you. Mention that you heard that you came down because you heard about it on this show and get a special prize.
You heard that, folks. Make sure you tell them you heard it on Grateful Dread Public Radio or on Grateful Dread's Potpourri. And who knows what goodness will come your way. But I will tell you this. You will have an incredible musical experience listening to the wonderful works of Mr. Woody Lesore. Woody, I am so happy. Tell people where they can get your record.
Well, this record can be had at my website, www.woodylesaur.com. Now, I know it's a tricky name, spelling L-I-S-S-A-U-E-R, but if you Google Woody Maryland Music or Woody Music Baltimore, anything like that, you'll also come up with me. Please seek me out. I would love to hear from you all on Facebook or whatever. Facebook Music, the Reverb Nation kind of tie-in that they have, also has these songs as individual MP3 downloads, as does, of course, iTunes, Amazon, Rhapsody, CD Baby, and all the major internet outlets of MP3 downloading.
So do check those out. And while you're listening for Adventures and Misadventures in Loveland, check out his other CDs as well. The first is called Woody Lesore, and the second is called War and the World. I'm telling you, I've been listening to this man for more than years. Real talent, real artist, and this man will take you places that you never dreamed of. But man, the journey's going to be worth it. Woody, thank you for joining us on Potpourri. I appreciate it so. And hope to see you very, very soon. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Baltimore's Woody Lesore. Again, if you're in the New York, New Jersey area, Woody plays at New York's Cafe Vivaldi, 6 p.m. on April 8th, and at Cafe Cielo on the 9th at 8:30 p.m. If you can't get there, be sure to buy his new CD, Adventures and Misadventures in Loveland, on assorted internet portals, including iTunes. Back in a minute with the Armchair Activist. This is Grateful Dread's Potpourri.
Most fires in the home start in the kitchen. For older adults, fires that begin while they are cooking are the third leading cause of fire death. The kitchen is a high danger zone for fire, so be extra cautious when cooking. Remember not to leave cooking food unattended. Do not wear loose clothing when cooking. Keep towels and potholders away from the range. And never use the range or oven to heat your home. This message is brought to you by the United States Fire Administration, your local fire department, and this radio station.
Try to see what's going down, going down.
In the confusion, find the ground to go.
Drink all day, rock all night. Half a mile from Tucson, by the morning light.
I'm David Gans. This week on the Grateful Dead Hour, we'll hear some rare tape from October 22nd, 1971.
The Grateful Dead Hour is brought to you in part by GDPR sponsor member PeaceButtons.info. Tune in and turn on to the Grateful Dead Hour every Sunday at noon and Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Grateful Dread Public Radio, your home for diverse sounds. Time for the Armchair Activist, presenting opportunities for you to help make a better world. We have two for this week. Right off the presses, did you know that if the GOP gets its way, Medicare will be dead in 10 years? They want to eliminate the guarantee of medical care to seniors in America. Their budget plan would replace Medicare with vouchers that seniors would use to pay big insurance. And if the vouchers don't cover it, too bad. Not good enough. Move On urges you, find out where GOP lawmakers stand on Medicare and hold them accountable. Also, in New York, Saturday at noon, join the throngs at Union Square for a rally to fight war and Islamophobia. On the West Coast, the rally will be held Sunday at noon at Dolores Park in San Francisco. For more information, go to nationalpeaceconference.org. And that's it! I hope you've enjoyed the show. Join us again next week for another batch of Grateful Dread's Potpourri. I'm Natalie Davis, wishing you peace. This has been Grateful Dread's Potpourri. If you have questions or comments regarding the show, contact us at gdrinfo@gmail.com. Find us online at gdreadradio.net and follow us on Twitter at GDPR. Grateful Dread's Potpourri is written and produced in the studios of Grateful Dread Public Radio, the progressive peace radio voice of Summit, New Jersey.